Hello, everyone, and welcome to the International Journal Mentors Podcast. As editorial fellows, we wanted to learn from the amazing and incredible leaders in our field and take inspiration from their experiences. Today, we are honored to speak with Professor Jessica McAlpine. Professor McAlpine is the Chao Wei Memorial Chair in Gynecologic Oncology and Head of the Division of Gynecologic Oncology, along with Dr. Sarah Finlayson. She is part of the OV Care research team in British Columbia, the director of the OV Care Tissue Bank, and the recipient of a CIHR New Investigator Award and BC Cancer Foundation Clinical Science Award in 2016 to 2021. Her research focuses on molecular subtypes of endometrial cancers, ovarian and vulvar cancers, as well as the prevention of ovarian cancers. With me today joining are my co-fellows from across the globe, Elena from Italy, Ilaria as well from Italy, myself from Canada, Arthi from India, Andrina from Venezuela, Bella from Georgia, Yossi also from Canada, Beatrice from Spain, and Diletta from Italy. We're so honored, Dr. McAlpine, that you accepted our invitation. And so we will begin the question period so you can enlighten us and guide us through our careers. So I'll invite Elena Oliaro from Italy to ask her first question.
Thank you very much. And thank you, Professor. So you are a world-renowned gynecologic oncologist, but what was your background and what led you to the road of gynecological cancer research? Which part of your training did you enjoy the most?
Yeah, thank you. I was in a very relaxed university setting. I would say I was playing sports and having fun and came to a decision to pursue medicine, not until my senior year. And even within med school and residency, I think I wasn't exposed to GYN oncology until quite late. Nor to research. So I certainly had no special skills really coming into the field. I think I'm grateful for an educational journey that allowed me to be exposed to these things and maybe figure out along the way where the fit was and where I maybe could contribute. In terms of what did I enjoy the most, I think for me, I got to work a bit internationally. I worked in small hospitals in Kenya and Guatemala, and I think that was the first time that I really realized that medicine was what I loved and what fit the most and what inspired me.
Thank you so much. And which strategy allows you to achieve high levels both as a surgeon and as a researcher?
That's a hard question because we never think we're there yet, right? In either area, we're always trying to do better and trying to balance things. I think for me, it was probably very important to feel like I had a solid surgical foundation first. And once you feel like you have that comfort level, then it became a priority about protecting time, right? For research and having this fantastic collaborative minds around you. For me, trying to answer something that was clinically meaningful in terms of questions and not just publishing for the sake of publishing.
Great. Thank you so much.
The next question I'll invite to Andreina Fernandez.
Thank you, Professor. Can you share with us how PROMISE was developed?
Yeah, so I actually at that time was doing work in intratumoral heterogeneity in ovarian cancer. So, you know, studying genomic diversity of high-grade serous cancers across multiple anatomic sites or over time. And we were trying to craft a grant to consider looking at this in endometrial cancer. And I think recognized, hey, we can't even distinguish these tumor types from each other very well. So that question of intertumoral heterogeneity and sorting that out was a huge need. And I was working with this great group of pathologists, and they were honest about how difficult it was for them to tell these cancers apart and assign things, which of course has huge impact on how we treat patients. So we had the TCGA as a template of new genomic findings, but needed more practical tests that you could do in any center. And we played initially with 16 different models, like different molecular tests, different order of testing, and having this, you know, very clever statistical discernment that Dr. Talhuk provided with those early models, we're able to sort of pick the winner and then go forward with it.
Thank you so much. It sounds really inspiring. And so there is a famous saying in gyne-oncology that if you're lucky, you will only get one big trial per lifetime. Can you give us any advice on how to achieve such success as you had with the PROMISE trial?
Yeah, so, you know, EN10 used to be called TAPER, encompasses the two arms, right? You have an arm A that's rainbow blue poly, mostly early stage for de-escalation, and then an early stage NSMP arm. We've been trying to create something that was a molecular stratified trial in Canada for a few years. Kathy Hahn, Helen Mackay, and others. And it was really actually through Dr. Mackay's connection with the Transportec team that we realized we could work to collaborate on this shared vision of the poly de-escalation arm. And then had enough people and sites interested to make this trial definitely viable and going forward. So I guess I'd say, in terms of advice, talk to people around you, collaborate, particularly, you know, for rare trials, you're stronger together and somebody's going to have similar ideas and goals and provide refinement and improve it. So you'll actually succeed.
That's wonderful. And speaking of collaboration, our next question is from Arthi in India.
Thank you, Professor McAlpine. So we all know that research involves teamwork. What advice would you offer to teams engaged in research endeavors in gyne-oncology, particularly for those who are in leadership roles within the team?
Yes, great, great question, Arthi. Teams doing research in gyne cancers must be multidisciplinary. Pathologists are so often the key, right? For us, you need strong statistical support. You need someone on the team, which is likely you guys, who are going to ensure clinical relevance or good questions are asked. And then you need some sort of tools or infrastructure or team members that can help you do the science. I think in terms of leadership, going out somewhere and looking for a team that you want to join that actually wants you to succeed and are going to make space for you, that have demonstrated that they collaborate well and play well with others locally and internationally, and hopefully multidisciplinary.
Thank you, Professor McAlpine. Our next question is from Eliera.
Yes, thank you. I really appreciated your study published last year on the sub-analysis of the NSMP group based on the estrogen receptor status and tumor grade. It really looks like this group encompasses more than one entity with very distinct prognostic behaviors. More than one study in the last couple of years has attempted to redeem the role of estrogen receptor status as a standalone prognostic marker in endometrial cancer. However, hormonal status was not included in the latest risk stratification system recommended by ESGO in 2021. What is your opinion on this specific issue?
Thank you, Alaria. I think it will change. This ER data within NSMP, I think, is another good example of where multiple independent research teams came to the same conclusions and support that it's a real stratification feature within NSMP. For the ER story, it was in addition to our Canadian team, two Dutch teams, and an Italian team. And we're in the process of validating this in the low-risk NSMP cohort so that you might be able to identify these, you know, the majority of these patients that are candidates for de-escalation. But I think ER is already being used routinely by a lot of centers internationally in the UK and Australia and large centers in Europe, Canada, and otherwise. And I think it's identifying, you know, where you manage somebody and how you manage them, and for clinical trial eligibility. So I think it'll be in the next iteration. It's already being touted as so.
I'm here.
Thank you so much. I have another question. Research into the molecular classification of endometrial cancer has made remarkable strides in recent years, and subclassification of existing molecular groups has been hypothesized, particularly in NSMP and mismatch repair deficient endometrial cancers. However, the vast majority of evidence available to date is retrospective and sometimes based on small population studies. For instance, evidence on polymutated endometrial cancers. Based on your outstanding experience and knowledge, do you think we are ready to comprehensively include molecular classification in clinical guidelines, as already done in the SGO 2021 consensus and also in the FIGO 2023 classification system? Or is it wiser to be more clinically cautious and wait for the results of the Rainbow Umbrella trial?
Yeah, good questions and things we always want to be thoughtful about. So, I mean, remember, the WHO guidelines recommending implementation of molecular classification into standard path reporting, that came out in 2020. That's 4 years ago. And it was within months that the ESGO guidelines followed, where they actually implemented it into driving and directing treatment, and ESMO followed, and NCCN and FIGO. So yes, this is the new standard. How to use it? Remember, there's multiple added values of molecular classification. And yes, prognostic data and some of the predictive data is retrospective. But the demonstration of things like just reproducible classification, that's current, that's now. And the demonstration of things like trials within MMRD tumors and choosing immune checkpoint, that's now. That's not just retrospective, that's current data and everything too. So these, you know, Rainbow and other molecular stratified trials are really important, need to happen, and you're going to be able to study these biologically similar tumors together. But there's also enough data to support real world practice change in many situations now. And of course, there's examples in our field where there's been clinical practice change. It doesn't always require a randomized controlled trial. So you have to, you know, take the evidence, and I would argue there's no longer equipoise clinically not to integrate these features, at least into your discussions and management steps.
Thank you.
My question is about how do you balance your time between patient care or research and personal life?
So important. Yeah. We have to find things that bring joy in our life, right? And in turn, you'll bring that joy to your workplace. For me, it's my family. I have two girls, 15 and 18. It's running with the dogs and friends and sports. And I really liked the flexibility that a research schedule gave me in terms of being able to sometimes go for a run in the middle of the day or take my kids to school. I think ensuring this balance makes me better with my patients and kinder with my team. But there's not many fields. You guys have friends in other fields, right? We have this ridiculously long runway of training, unlike very many professions, and we have to take care of ourselves and each other.
Great. It's very inspiring again, Dr. McAlpine. And our next question is from Bella.
Thank you. In many countries, I have a question. In many countries, being a successful woman professional in your field can be a sensitive issue. For example, in my country, it is. How do individuals effectively manage this challenge while striving for success? I
take my hat off for those certainly who were before me, and then of course in different countries who've had a much harder paths as women surgeons and leaders. I have felt overall very supported in my journey, but I'm very, very aware of continued disparities even here, and in multiple facets of medicine, and academics in general, especially in ethnic minority women. How to navigate this, I would say continued advocacy, education, seeking out other women mentors locally and internationally. How have they navigated it in their systems and achieved success? I think being true to yourself, your values as a woman, not changing that or trying to fit into a different mold just because that's the mold that is there, would maybe just, provide that satisfaction. But I'm still trying to learn that too, and asking other people as well.
Yes, and in fact, the International Journal and the IGCS and ESGO are really great at lobbying this. And great certain sessions that occurred recently at ESGO. So, the next question is from Diletta Fumagalli.
Thank you, Doctor. A barrier to conducting good quality research is often funding. So, what would you suggest to young investigators applying to national or international grant opportunities?
I think some of the best time to get funding is in your first years of practice. I don't know what you feel like in your centers, but even as a young faculty after your fellowship, there are these small career, early career awards and different opportunities where if you have keen interest, good mentors, good ideas, they will support with the idea of protecting some time and someone that can grow into a clinician scientist. So protecting, I guess my advice would be to protect time from clinical load early. See what you can do to carve out or in your next, your new position, talk about those interests and try and protect some time to prioritize these things. We try to hire for our new staff and encourage them not to be full-time clinical and to say, do you want to take point two to do this? Or are you keen to do education or QI work or translational and protect that from the beginning? Because it's tough. You get busy and you feel behind the gun and you want to prove yourself, but carve it out from the beginning, I think.
Thank you so much.
Our next question is from Yossi.
Hi, so my question is whether with the increasing use of molecular and genetic studies in cancer treatment, what role do you believe classical pathology or histology would have in 20 years' time? And paralleling this question, with targeted therapy and personalized medicine on the rise, do you think the role of surgery would also shrink or may shrink in gyno-onc treatment?
Yeah, those are great, great questions. So I guess I'll start on the molecular stuff first. I think molecular stratification will be integral. I think the role of traditional pathology will depend on the disease type. Like we know in ovary, things work quite well in terms of discerning histomorphology for the different histotypes. Diseases like endometrial cancer, you need the molecular framework, but we know pathology is really important in NSMP tumors, for example. We don't think, for example, substantial LVI and poly, we don't care even for P53 abnormal. It's the good flavor or the bad flavor that's the overriding thing. But within NSMP, those features matter. You have clear cell cancers that are NSMP and do as poorly as P53 abnormal. So histotype plays a role, for example, or mesonephric types are different, and those are important. So I think it's going to be dependent on the situation and the disease type as well. I don't think surgery is going to go away. I think it's always going to have a role as well. Chemo-resistant disease or even chemo-sensitive disease where you've done really well on most sites, but you probably have clonal resistance and residual disease in some. So I think your job is secure. Maybe we'll get more intelligent about choosing the best surgical candidates and the best timing, because you guys go to meetings and see the tremendous debate about that and yeah, when to intervene, but I think it'll be there. And maybe, I mean, this clinical and surgical load's kind of what fuels all of us and makes us really happy, but that's maybe this is another reason why having a mix of other stuff in your field, education, research, and otherwise can help field, can kind of help sustain you too beyond your clinical and surgical roles.
Great, thank you.
Pleasure.
Great, so thank you so much, Dr. McAlpine. We really appreciated your time, all of your wisdom, and all of your great insights. So if there's any, do you have any final closing remarks for the podcast?
No, this is that's very, very kind of you guys to ask me, and wonderful sessions, and I look forward to seeing you guys in future meetings.
Perfect. Great. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining.
Thank you. Thank you.